The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Am I the only one who thought the report that Ursula just delivered with the news of the third victim in the stabbing incident refusing help, that, I mean, it's bizarre enough to hear about somebody going berserk and stripping naked after stabbing people in downtown Seattle near the Nordstrom on 6th Avenue. But the part where a third victim refuses help, I thought, who was this third victim and what...
I mean, that's even, the part that stood out to you.
Yes, because I expected somebody to go berserk. I mean, I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often, frankly, because I, like I said, I've been driving around for a long time in the Seattle area. I see young people, you know, people in their 20s and 30s that are drugged out of their minds on the side, and then older people, same thing. And eventually some of these drugs cause permanent brain damage, psychosis, and other things.
True.
So, you know,
and if you have a weapon on top of that. Yes.
Exactly. I mean, I've come across a guy in the Soto District who, you know, he was started screaming at me, and I'm looking and I see a knife holster on his belt, but I don't see where the knife is. And it made me extremely nervous, you know, and I thought I was watching, you know, where his hands going, what's going to happen here. So I expected that part to happen. What I didn't expect is if you get stabbed by a knife of unknown origin from a fellow who could be anywhere, you know.
It could be that the
maybe
injury was relatively minor.
Yeah,
and it would be like a scraping.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's like getting stabbed with a needle. Nowadays, due to infectious disease, I highly recommend just going in and, you know, seeing what kind of prophylactic medical care might be advised. That's all. I mean, okay, so that's not the big lead, but I had to get it out because I'm listening to that going.
The fact that this person, you know, randomly stabbed three people, had taken all his clothes off, and the one thing that stands out to you, why did that one person refuse help?
Yeah, and note the guy that was asked, hey, you want some of this? You know, he says no and backs away. He sounded fairly young, but the two stabbing victims are 75 years old and 77 years old. So, you know, this gutless wonder who brandishes the knife, first he challenges somebody. And then he goes, do you really think the 77-year-old was saying, oh, yeah, I want some? You know, give me. It's just so sad and pathetic.
Yeah, we need to find out more about the suspect in this case, because I'm going to guess that there may be. But, you know, that's just pure speculation.
Gentleman's bet.
Yeah, someone randomly attacking.
Yeah, I will say that this person has a record. I'm going to guess. I'm going to say this is not the first run-in with the law. That's my bet.
I'll be curious too if, I mean, and we're looking into all these things, but, you know, there was that report from the Downtown Seattle Association about the most prolific offenders. It would be, I mean, I'm sure everyone's looking to see
that will be
was this person
on that list. Yeah. So thanks so much. We'll be following that throughout the show, of course, and throughout the afternoon here on 97.3 Cairo FM. But right now it's time for the big lead.
The big lead, top national.
It's sad, but a national political institution, an icon, is gone. Ross Perot is dead at the age of 89. Here is CNN's Wolf Blitzer on Perot's third-party candidacies.
H. Ross Perot was already a mega-successful businessman when he leapt into the American consciousness as an independent presidential candidate in 1992. His folksy manner...
And I was down in Texas taking care of business, tending to my family. This situation got so bad that I decided I better get into it.
And his laser-like focus on the economy...
We have got to stop sending jobs overseas.
...made Perot one of the most successful third-party presidential candidates in U.S. history. He won almost 19% of the vote in 1992. From the beginning, Perot's campaign struck a chord with those seeking a third-party candidate. He threw his hat into the ring on CNN's Larry King Live.
Number one, I will not run as either a Democrat or Republican, because I will not sell out to anybody but to the American people. And I will sell out to them.
In a presidential debate, he attacked both Republican President George H.W. Bush and Democratic challenger Bill Clinton with equal vigor about the nation's debt.
Now, it's not the Republicans' fault, of course, and it's not the Democrats' fault. And what I'm looking for is who did it.
Perot also directly challenged both candidates' support of NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. Perot feared it would cause the loss of American jobs.
There will be a giant sucking sound going south.
You know, here's what I would say about Perot. I did not support either of his presidential launches. I actually think that if he hadn't bowed out the first time around, I think things could have been different. Remember, he kind of stepped in and stepped out. Is that the first or second time? It's hard to recall now. But anyway... I think that regardless of how you felt about Perot's politics, you had to respect him as a human being in terms of he's a patriotic guy. You couldn't question that. I remember watching him on Larry King Live and wondering, who is this guy? Where did he come from? And learning more about him, you know, his employees, you know, talk about so often in pop culture and you're watching a movie and the corporate head is always they're callous against their workers. They don't care about their families. You know, they just want to enslave people and move on, you know. And the real life story of Ross Perot, the billionaire, was his employees get taken hostage during the 1979 Iranian Revolution. And he privately finances Operation Hotfoot to rescue the men and bring them home. You know, he goes to Vietnam to work for better conditions for U.S. prisoners of war. I mean, he was an American patriot and was recognized as such. Now, according to the CNN story, for years, President George Herbert Walker Bush blamed Perot for his defeat, saying in a 2012 documentary that Perot cost him the election. Now, they say election experts and research challenged that theory. The New York Times found Perot's effect on the outcome of the election, quote, appears to have been minimal. And the Washington Post reported Clinton would have still won by a large margin if Perot hadn't run. I'm not buying that. I think there's too many dynamics in there. I don't know what research they were using, but it seems to me that Perot helped galvanize the conversation. He kept George Herbert Walker Bush from being able to gain any traction or be able to control the narrative or fight back. You know, the recession had ended by the time the election had happened, but he could never get traction on that because he had two people hitting him from both sides. So I find it hard to imagine that Perot didn't influence the election. That said, you know, he was doing what he felt was his patriotic duty, and he was a certainly recognizable and fascinating U.S. Business and political figure. He's dead at 89, and that leads us to
the big lead, big local.
A 20-year-old Aberdeen man named Derek Byrd was severely burned last week after he ran back and was burning home to rescue his niece. He told Cairo 7 Television that he'd do it all over again.
Once I realized she wouldn't jump, I just took action, ran right up the stairs. So I tried to kick the door towards the fires, trying to get the door so the fire would, you know what I mean, kind of calm down. But it didn't really work. I picked her up, grabbed her, and then just ran as fast as I could through the flames. I felt my skin, like, I felt it sizzling. I just didn't care. Honestly, the adrenaline took over. My niece and my nephews are, like, a lot to me. They're, like, everything.
Is this not the greatest brother of all time? I mean, seriously, I love it. And I got choked up just reading the story the first time on MyNorthwest.com. I mean, this is a guy who the house is on fire. He sees his sister dropping her kids out the window. He's catching the kids. And the mom falls at one point, and the 9-year-old is still in the house, and she's afraid to jump and won't jump. So, you know, they're begging her, screaming at her, trying to get her to jump, and he just tears off into the house, takes off his shirt, covers the child's face with the shirt to protect her, carries her and runs out of the house, and he's feeling that sizzle on his flesh. And you see his face, you know, his face didn't go unscathed either. He's got some serious burns.
Do you think most people would do that?
I don't know. I think a lot of people freeze. They'd like to. They'd like to think they would, but it would be tough. And running in fire is, your every instinct in your body is designed to say, don't go in there, you know. I can't imagine the thought of leaving my niece or nephew, you know, to suffer. I mean, I just, you know, the love is too strong there. But I'd like to think most people would. But I think, you know, it's hard to say it. It's one of those things where I think everybody would say I would do it, but it's also the kind of thing where you don't know until you're tested. And also, you know, there's that question of how do you find the path through the flames? I mean, where is that path? Where is it going to be? Sometimes there is no path. So I don't want to condemn that person when there's just no path in there. But I'll tell you, this is an inspiring story. This kid's a great kid. And I just picture this family think about it. From this point on, when he has an argument with his sister, he's just going to say, hey, see the scar?
You know? Remember the time?
Yeah, remember the time? You know, this birthday gift's a little light this year. Come on. You know. And but anyway, no, great great young man, and good for that whole family, Derek Byrd. severely burned, but, you know, he'd do it all over again. And he says he'd suffer death before he'd allow harm to come to his niece and nephews. And I empathize and share that point of view. Great guy.
The Big Lead, top trending.
The first Democrat to fall was Congressman Eric Swalwell. It's even hard to say his name. The Democrat who said he's looking forward to getting back into being a congressman.
The polls have had their way, so here we are in July. I'm excited, as I said, to continue this work. I'm going to leave here. I'm going to an immigration roundtable to address the border crisis, which affects our district with so many migrants and their families coming here. So, yes, I'm excited.
I loved how the news coverage of this said first major bow out of the 2020 election was Congressman Eric Swalwell. And I thought to myself, how many Americans knew who Swalwell was? I mean, admittedly, he's a congressman. So if you're really paying close attention to Congress, you might know. But other than that, he would be, hey, he looks like he's kind of a character actor on a TV show that might be playing a standby politician. You know, no traction whatsoever. And then he disappears. People say, oh, thank God. How many others? How many are left? What, 21 in this race? Maybe 20 to 22. But just as he falls, another jumps in to take his place. Billionaire Tom Steyer released this campaign video today.
I think what people believe is that the system has left them. I think people believe that the corporations have bought the democracy, that the politicians don't care about or respect them, don't put them first, are not working for them, but are actually working for the people who have rigged the system. Really what we're doing is trying to make democracy work by pushing power down to the people.
So he's basically taken the Trump message and is putting a softer voice to it, right? So, system doesn't work. I'm going to bring power to the people. It's broken. I'm going to drain the swamp. And it's funny because he's pledged to spend over $100 million, and he's also one of the top two apparently personal contributors to Democrats overall and, you know, lifetime. I mean, he's a big-time political contributor. It's just funny that if you really believe the system's broken and you got all these yahoos in there that aren't doing anything, why are you giving so many millions of dollars to their causes? You know what I mean? Well, it's like, you know what? System's entirely broken. Bunch of losers. We gotta find people who are actually committed to helping the American people. P.S. I'm giving millions of dollars to losers.
I like when he says
help the American people.
I like when he says we're gonna keep this down to the people. So me, a billionaire.
That's right.
Is gonna come in and save everything.
I'm gonna bring this down to the people. Now that I'm in the race, you know, not the people that I've been shoveling millions of dollars to are not doing the job. So I'm in it myself. Now, this is a little awkward because, like I said, he's a major contributor, including a contributor to another potential president in Governor Jay Inslee, who's posed yesterday. If you didn't see the pose that he scored for the soccer match, it is well worth it's well worth a view. He said his election team wouldn't let him dye his hair purple, although I desperately want to Photoshop it now just to help him out in that score. But since Steyer has been a contributor to Inslee, does this mean Inslee's on his way out? Or, I mean, how do you, you know, launch yourself in a campaign and say, don't vote for that guy. He's just a major contributor to all my campaigns. He says he's going to make climate change one of his top issues. So, you know, he stands along a number of Democrats making climate change a top issue. Also, if you're Governor Inslee and climate change is your top issue, it makes you wonder, you know, at what point do you just bow out and say, apparently other people are into this. I don't need to keep going. Next big lead.
The big lead, top trending.
Some Democrats are calling for Labor Secretary Alex Acosta to resign due to his handling of the Epstein case, the billionaire financier who is now facing numerous charges involving abuse of underage girls, sexual abuse of underage girls. Chuck Schumer says he's got 3 points he wants to make.
And serial sex trafficker of children, Acosta chose to let him off easy. This is not acceptable. We cannot have, as one of the leading appointed officials in America, someone who has done this, plain and simple. Second, I am calling on the Department of Justice's Office of Professional Responsibility to make public the results of its review of Acosta's handling of the Epstein case. Senators Murray and Kane have called for these findings, but the Justice Department so far has stonewalled, has refused to make them public. This review cannot be kept in the dark, particularly given the new revelations, and there should be hearings. And third, the president needs to answer for his statements he has made about his relationship with Mr. Epstein. In 2002, he said he'd known Epstein for 15 years and he was, quote, a terrific guy who enjoyed women, quote, on the younger side, unquote. Epstein was also reportedly a regular at the Mar-a-Lago Club for years.
All right, a couple of things there. One is people keep taking the quote from Trump, and it is creepy, back in 2002. But saying a guy likes women on the younger side is not the same as saying a guy likes women that are underage. You know, that's two different things. If Trump was saying, yeah, he likes underage teenagers, and that would be a much different phenomenon than a rich billionaire or a politician, for example, that is attracted to younger women. And it's 2002, prior to any of the charges that were filed against this guy. So he wasn't convicted yet. Now he's a convicted sex offender. And Trump is saying, hardly know the guy. And so is Bill Clinton, by the way. Bill Clinton, this guy was a donor to the Clinton Foundation, $25,000, which sounds like a lot, but the guy's a billionaire. So he could not have been that big of a donor if it's just $25,000, unless the report I was reading was wrong about the overall financing. But you know, he hung out with President Clinton a number of times. Clinton said, well, it was only strictly about the Clinton Foundation. Hardly knew him other than that. Didn't hardly know him at all. So who knows? But should the investigation be public? You bet it should. But I do find it rich that so many people, you know, I was upset yesterday and I pointed out I didn't like the deal that Epstein got last time around. I thought it was atrocious. I thought it was awful. I would like to hear more prosecutors that weren't just committed to doing the talking point thing, give their take on what the deal was and how it was situated based on the evidence that was there. I'd like to see that. So, you know, over the long haul, though, I look at this and I think there have been so many politicians embroiled in various scandals, including Ed Murray right here in Seattle, that, you know, or celebrity figures like Roman Polanski, who's wanted for the rape of a 13-year-old who got a standing ovation at the Oscars. It's just amazing how many people are so selective in when they're willing to denounce the abusers of children. Sad. David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM.
Welcome back to the Dory Monson Show. This is producer Nicole. You know, I had to sprinkle in a few best ofs while we were gone. So here's Dory with Dean Hardwick, who's moving his business out of Seattle after over 80 years. Here you go. Enjoy.
Well, I got an email yesterday from a guy that we've had on the show before. It's near the end. It's the beginning of the end for a Seattle institution. Hardwick and Sons Hardware Store over there in the U District on Roosevelt. It's going bye-bye. And I saw a Idaho newspaper story about how they're going to relocate this hallowed Seattle business to Post Falls, Idaho. The owner of Hardwick and Sons is Dean Hardwick. He joins us here on Cairo Radio. Dean, it's always good to talk to you.
Yeah, hi, Dory. Nice to talk to you, too.
Okay, so in case people weren't listening last time we talked, I told you when I was a student at the University of Washington, I love walking through old hardware stores, especially the ones that have a little bit of clutter to them. There was one in Ballard, Crown Hill Hardware. There's one in Chelan, Ace Hardware that I love. And your store. I would just walk around your store when I was a student at the University of Washington a million years ago. How long have you guys been in business there?
Well, at that location, it's 81 years
okay.
of our 87 years existence.
81 years. And when you first contacted me months and months ago, you just said Seattle had gotten not only too expensive, but I remember there were some, you know, drug-fueled crimes right outside your store, weren't there?
Yeah, we would find needles, and then people would be tenting in our backyard and our back parking lot. And we'd find needles all the time, and then indigents come in and steal, and you know, it's just and plus I'm just kind of fearful for my kids. I have a daughter who occasionally closes out, and I'm not there, and I make sure that one of our longstanding employees are with her to walk her to the car.
Yeah. No, I don't blame you at all. So, and you own the property. You guys sold the property, right?
Yeah, my family owns the property. I don't own 100% of it, so it's split between myself and my brother's widow. Unfortunately, he passed away a couple years ago. And so we pretty much just, the store is not self-supporting. Last year, I made probably a negative $4 an hour.
Okay. but here's what I figured when I talked to you. I thought, well, but the property's worth a fortune. You guys are going to cash out and then just live a good life of retirement. But when I saw that you are opening a new hardware store in Post Falls, Idaho, that made it clear you love the business and you're still going to work in the business. You just don't want to do it in Seattle anymore.
That's right. And actually, my son, who will be the fourth generation, he's working hard on the website. And so that'll be one of our foundations for the new business. But, you know, I'm passing along actually the philosophy I got from my father and mother. My father passed away 76, gave the business to my brother and I. And then my mother basically charged us about one-seventh the normal rent so that we could build the business and have families. And both we had families, and so I want to do the same thing for my son.
And so you're still going to charge him rent on this new building. He's going to have to work for a living, not just be the inherited wealth that could come with having a nice prime piece of real estate on Roosevelt.
Well, yeah. I mean, he has a good work ethic. So we did homeschool, even though we're Roman Catholic. And all my kids, they have a good work ethic, and they're all best friends to one another, and they don't really participate in the modern world, which has all its traps.
Where'd the work ethic come from? For all the parents with little kids who are listening right now, how did you instill that?
Probably by example. Plus they enjoyed the business, and actually about 12 years ago, they were between 13 and 22 years old, and they picked up the TV that was in the closet, in the living room, on their own volition, without any encouragement from their parents, and they put it in the closet. So that is the benefit of homeschool. They were just something that's naturally instilled by their faith, and it's just been a blessing. It was a hard thing at first to do, the homeschool, but I told my wife at the time, way a long time ago, that in the end it would work out better for us, and it has.
Yeah,
easier.
Yeah, no, it sounds absolutely wonderful. So I still have to get in there before you close the doors and lock it up. So what am I going to see when I? Because I haven't been there for a couple of decades, Dane. What am I going to see when I walk in there?
Well, it will be more than you saw a couple decades ago. In the beginning, when I took over from my father, it was a little bit different emphasis on types of product. He was buying from about 20 manufacturers around the U.S., and I increased it along with my brother up to about 150. And there was like three showcases in 1970, and now there's over 30,
okay,
which most of them I built. And so it's got pegboard to the ceiling and stuff hanging everywhere. So it's mostly emphasized in the tool realm, but we do also carry hardware and even plumbing and electrical.
There you go. All right. But you still have that clutter that I love, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I probably shouldn't say this, but when the firemen who shop there, they kind of look the other way.
Okay. No, you probably shouldn't say that. Okay.
No. So any firemen out there,
yeah.
You didn't hear it.
Okay. All right. No, I don't have any firemen listen to my show. Okay.
No,
well,
all nice guys. So.
I wish you the very best. I was impressed when I saw that you aren't just selling out and collecting the dough, but opening another store in Post Falls, Idaho. But I'm sorry that Seattle's losing you guys after 86 years. That's a shame.
Yes, I know. I'm really sad about it, but, you know, it's just too dangerous here.
I understand. All right. Well, Dean, I'll come by and see you sometime before you close, and I wish you the very best.
Okay, thanks a lot, Doris.
Okay, you bet. Dean Hardwick, Hardwick & Sons on Roosevelt there. As always, I'd love to hear what you think. The Online Trading Academy text line is 98973. That's 98973. Lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show.
David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Amazon workers are planning to strike. On what day? Well, Prime Day, of course, just when Amazon is launching its key sales for the year, at least outside of Christmas. Amazon workers at a Minnesota warehouse are warning the company they plan to strike. And that persists even though the company points out that they already pay everybody more than $15 an hour, which is in part what some of these organizations that wanted workers to strike were demanding. So they also demand less strict productivity standards. So Amazon is infamous for demanding a certain amount of productivity for every employee, not just warehouse workers, but everybody. It's a very intense environment in which to work. Works apparently quite well for some people and is hellish, as described, for others. The Amazon company says they pay hourly rates from $16.25 to $20.80 with benefits, and they've invited anyone who wants to take a tour of the facility in Shakopee, Minnesota, if they would like to show that the strike is unnecessary. Now, it's interesting. There was a previous walkout demands where that led to things like a relaxing of the pressure on workers to meet quotas during Ramadan, designation of a conference room as a prayer space, because many of the workers in this particular warehouse were Muslim immigrants. And so they were meeting some of the demands and making some concessions. So maybe the walkout is planned that way. The problem I see is those who are organizing this particular walkout are saying things like, Amazon's going to be telling one story about itself, which is they can ship a Kindle through your house in one day. Isn't that wonderful? Says William Stoltz, one of the Shakopee employees organizing the strike. And I thought, hey, dude, that is actually wonderful. I mean, that's one of the reasons people are subscribing to Prime and one of the reasons why you've got your job. People keep forgetting a minimum wage is actually zero. Whatever people set the mandated minimum wage as, the actual minimum wage is always zero because the company can always go bust. Not that Amazon's in danger of that anytime soon, but for these particular workers, you know, if the warehouse can't do the job, Amazon will open one somewhere else that can do the job. So they've got their demands. I'm more sympathetic to, because they're more clear and concise and compelling, the demands of the Sleepyhead Club that is organized in Pierce County. In the Tacoma School District, it's a group of teen students who are lobbying for the school district to start opening junior and high school at a later time. They say that it's too tough to wake up at 6 a.m. Classes, says one student, Connor Mon, wakes up for school by intentionally falling off his bed. He learned to get up on time to make it to Stewart Middle School, where classes start at 8. They want school to start at 8:30 a.m. or later. And I have to say, I mean, it sounds like lazy teenagers. It'd be easy to say junior high and lazy teenagers, they got to learn to get out of bed and work. Which I did as a young guy. I remember, you know, when I started my first jobs, I was in junior high. You'd have to wake up really early. You're meeting, you know, especially for agricultural work. You want to get the majority of your workday in before the sun is really beating down on you. So you're going to start work maybe at 6 a.m. or so. So I did that from time to time. But that said, I do remember it being much tougher to wake up super early in the morning when you're a young guy or a young gal, back when you're a teenager, than later. And, you know, there are a number of studies that show that the clock, the internal clock, means that young people tend to want to stay up later and get up later. And so, you know, while I'm not in favor of, you know, being, what's the word, all snowflakey about it and saying, oh, my gosh, you know, we've got to make sure that they get their 9 hours of sleep in, I do think they have a point. Like, if you could find a way to get school to start a little later, maybe they would be more awake. Who doesn't recall? First of all, I think we should install, we should borrow the, I know it's cultural appropriation, but I'm entirely in favor of that. If you find something good in another culture, just adopt it. You know, if you can't get the sleepyhead club to start classes late, they might want to institute some kind of siesta. Because if we could all just get the siesta, I know that I would be better off. How many of you have ever been at work and you thought to yourself, my word, what I would give for a 20-minute nap? But instead, you're stuck nodding, trying to down a bunch of coffee when, say, a 15-minute power nap would really do the trick.
I think all businesses should have little cots.
Just a nice little cot. Or you could just go to REI or Cabela's or a Bass Pro or something. Grab one of those cots out, you know, and say, look, I need 15 minutes. I just need a power nap here. And so it's not just the teenagers that are calling for the sleepyhead club. But it's the rest of us as well. Now, admit it. When you're a teenager and you're getting up super early for school, were you tired? I mean, I was exhausted.
Oh, yeah. I remember tired it all the whole time.
Yeah. All day long until about, you know, 2 o'clock. And at 2 o'clock, it was this contest where you're just thinking, my word, you know, there's 45 minutes left before I'm out. I've just got to make it. Just got to make it a little farther. So, I mean, would you have done better if school started later?
Way better, like 11 o'clock, started about 11 a.m.
Yeah, I can see that too. It seems like the whole day should be longer. Just leave them at school for 10 hours. David Bowes in for Tori Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM.